Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Every day I'm moving further from sobriety. Further from sobriety. So sobriety. Every day I'm moving further
and
from
now
sobriety.
It's time for Homegrown, your only show dedicated to local art, with your host, David Von Strawn.
Hello! It is 10 o'clock, and if you are looking for quite a host, you have
arrived here by mistake.
You've truly messed up. after 3 weeks of being locked away by capitalism and weird-ass schedules, I am back! It is David Von Strawn, a.k.a. The Devious One, with you at Homegrown, your show about local art here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Oh my God, Charlottesville, it's August. And it's funny because some people act like this August 12th wouldn't come back around again. Like this was over. This is squash.
You gonna jump into that right now?
Yeah.
You gonna jump into that right now?
Oh,
right at the top of the show.
Sit right on top of this 800-pound elephant.
You're gonna get yourself angry. You're gonna get yourself upset.
No.
You're gonna start attacking guests.
No. Hold on. When have I ever attacked a guest on this subject? Maybe my passion and my anger towards the situation. My passion. You know where I'm at. My passionate delivery and my passion in that delivery.
Don't back off of that. Double down on passionate. I think make that yours. I think that's going to be it. Black people, we have passionate.
You know, I be passionate all the time.
It's a physical substance. It builds up in us, and the passionate just has to be relieved.
I was passionate too hard at work, and that's why I got ruled up. My bad to my supervisor and to that customer. I was passionate. My fault. No, we can make that happen. Passionate, 2018. No, I'm not gonna get heated about August 12th. I've had therapy. I've had conversations. I've had discussions, and I've had preparation. And honestly, realistically, I think that this August 12th will be a little bit more. I will say. Contained. And
I just want to say that with the increased police presence, it is so nice to go from having strange, possibly hostile, probably hostile, armed, sketchy white men going through the streets, and instead having police officers going through the streets, which is a completely different thing.
No sketchy armed white men there.
Possibly.
Well, I mean, I'm saying there will be the similar amount of police presence that was there last year, and they just formed barricades and they stood around until a car plowed into 32 people. But that's another story here. You know, see, you're trying to get me fired up.
No,
see, that's what you're trying to do. But that's neither here nor there. What I'm trying to say is, I think that the powers that be and the community around us will take this a little bit more seriously. And with that, I think that the opposition and the people coming in to, practice their free speech rights will be a little less inclined to cause violence with quiet abandon. However, I don't think that we should be slipping, and I don't think that this date should go without notice and without preparation and without serious consideration for what might happen during next weekend. So with that being said, in terms of business, Homegrown is doing a special show. I will be on site, on location, in the downtown mall, doing a live feed of Homegrown Extra, which we've been trying to like kind of inaugurate and start off for some time. We're trying to do this thing called Homegrown Extra, where we're live feeding not just on Sundays but other things. So I'm gonna be in the field. Leslie's gonna be here in the studio with Clinton, doing the show, talking about it. Our guest is TBD, to be determined for that day. But we will have a guest. We will have a guest pertinent to the matter. And it's, as white people say, it's going to be a humdinger. So you should check it out. And I look forward to that date. But yeah, without further ado, we have wonderful guests in the studio who got things to do other than listen to me outside of the show. So I'm going to just turn it over to them. This is Lisa Jevac, assistant to the director and early visions coordinator at UVA Fairland Art Museum. And this is the illustrious Charlene Green.
Whoa. Illustrious.
You know, illustrious.
I
know about you, girl.
Oh.
I got to give you props. Manager of Charlottesville's Office of Human Rights and so much more. Also affiliated with the Signs of Change Project, with the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center and the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative, two amazing houses of art and understanding and activism and coordination. So props to the Jeff School and the Bridge PAI for the work that they do. And thank you, Charlene Green and Lisa Jevac, for coming on to the show.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having us.
What's that? What's that, silent audience member? I think I had a question about what is exactly the Signs of Change project that is going down with the Jeff School and the Bridge PAI, Charlene?
Well, I'm going to let Lisa describe the project, and because there are things that I play a part in that that I'm very very honored to help carry out. But I think Lisa has a better handle on the exact nature of the project and its origins. So, Lisa.
Thank you. So, Signs of Change came about after the Fraylin was contacted by the Four Freedoms 50 States Initiative. This is an organization that started in 2016 by two internationally known artists, Hank Willis Thomas and Eric Getzman. They have essentially created this network of artists and art institutions to create art exhibitions, and platforms for community engagement, civic discourse, and action through art.
Right on.
So Hank contacted our director, the Fraylin's director, Matthew McClendon, back in the spring, asked if the Fraylin would be one of the participating institutions. And from there, we just started brainstorming ideas on how the Fraylin could participate in this. And we came up with our idea and named it Signs of Change. And it's happened very quickly because the goal was to get this hitting the ground by fall, and so here we are today. And part of this project is to educate the community on African American history in Charlottesville. So that is why we reached out to Charlene. One of my colleagues and I had worked with Charlene before on another program that we do at the Fraylin, and Charlene gives this amazing presentation. So we reached out to her, to Andrea Douglas at the Jefferson School African American and Heritage Center, and put together this this program.
Cool. So, again, exactly what is part of the, like, how artistic is the project? Does it deal with paintings? Does it deal with pictures? Does it deal with what visual medium is used to describe the quote-unquote signs of change, and what and who else are you involving into this project to incorporate its artistic vision?
Yeah, so signs has a couple different meanings. Signs of change, literally signs, as well as figuratively signs of change for the better. And so with Charlene and Andrea's help, we compiled a list of things everyone should know about Charlottesville, focusing on African American history. We put out a call for artists last month, and actually the deadline is August 7th. So any artists out there listening,
on an art show and I'm just hearing about this.
So yes, deadline is Tuesday, 11:59. Get your application in. We have these 12 things, historic events, and we're asking artists to create an original work of art that expresses something creatively about that event. And a jury will select 12 artists from their proposal to create their original work. So the original work is going to be displayed in an exhibition at the Bridge in January. But before that, this fall, we're going to create this sort of campaign of banners using the original artwork that's going to be reproduced. The Look 3 Festival has generously allowed us to use their structures that they used during the festival in the downtown mall down near the Free Speech Wall. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have those banners displayed down there and hopefully some other places throughout the city showing the artistic interpretations of those historic events.
Nice.
So that's one part of Signs of Change. The other part of Signs of Change is a series of six workshops that we're going to be organizing. They're going to take place at various locations throughout the city. And that's where Charlene is going to give her presentation at these workshops. And then following her presentation, participants will actually create yard signs with using their creative inspiration from what they just learned. And not only what they've learned from Charlene's presentation, but by actual conversations and dialogue that have taken place throughout the creative process. So between Charlene and we have teaching artists that are going to help facilitate these important conversations.
Right on.
And I can let Charlene explain a little more about what she'll be doing at the workshops.
So the part that I play, as Lisa was referring to, has to do with my presentation on the racial and ethnic history of Charlottesville. So I take folks from like the very beginning, thousands of years ago, when this area was populated by the Monacan tribe, and what happened to them over the course of the time. And I just take points in history, some of it connecting to federal law, some of it state law, but a lot of it focused on local events that have occurred here that sort of have given us this picture and the narrative that a lot of us are not familiar with about Charlottesville's racial and ethnic history. Because, you know, before August 12th, when you said Charlottesville, people would say UVA, Thomas Jefferson, Monticello. Just like there were no people of color who contributed, except in the construct of slavery, to the existence of this area. And so I'm not originally from Charlottesville. I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio. Cincinnati's got its own issues.
Go Bengals.
Yeah. Bengals, yeah. Hey, Houday.
Yeah.
There you go.
Icky Wood Shuffle. I see you.
I'm a big Reds fan. From the old Reds, the big red machine. But
all right. Free Pete Rose, I mean.
Oh, yeah. The red machine. Oh, yeah. The only time I ever skipped school was to go to the second celebration when the Reds won the World Series on Fountain Square downtown. Mm. Only time I ever skipped school. Mm. But anyways, I digress.
That's what sports does.
Yeah, doesn't it? But so, so taking those points in time and as I was saying, I'm not from here, so I came here to go to UVA as a grad student, and as I walked around grounds, you could cut the racial tension with a knife. It was so intense.
And so
and,
it's
and coming from Cincinnati, that says something.
Yeah, Ohio too.
Totally. and so in the process of having been a student at the university, a coach at the university, and then working in the city and the county in different capacities, mm-hmm. It just became incumbent upon me to understand what is this area all about.
And thank you for saying that, because I was bubbling up like a shaken bottle of soda, to quote the great Lisa Wolfork. I have learned so much mm-hmm. about Charlottesville, the land that I grew up in. Mm. For 20 plus years, I've learned more about the history of its land in the mm-hmm. last 18 months than I have in the 20 plus years before that.
Right.
What I mean to say by that is that I think that what has happened is that this, I want to say Nazis, but I want to kind of give white nationalists, I'll say that, whatever. But I think what has happened is that they've weaponized free speech, and that they've weaponized this idea and that this narrative that they can say whatever they want. And also, there is this Confederate usurping of the meaning of Southern heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's been happening for a while.
Yeah. To unbeknownst to my knowledge, being unwoke all of this time in my Southern land. And I'm like, what about my heritage?
Mm-hmm.
What about my grandmother and my grandfather that built their house in Louisa County with their own hands?
Right.
And settled and owned their own land and divided it to 13 of their children. Like, what about their heritage? What about their time? So what I'm trying to say is that I think that and what you're doing and what you and Lisa are trying to like achieve in the community
mm-hmm.
is a place to learn about the place and mm-hmm. defeat the narrative that has been given out. Kind of understand that, hey, I mean, as hokey as a song might be, this land is my land and this land is your land.
Right.
And there are different stories as to how that land is achieved
mm-hmm.
and how it is owned. And yeah, I just think that this project is incredibly important into delivering those messages.
Mm-hmm.
But Clinton's telling me we got to pay some bills, so we're going to do that. Charlene Green, Lisa Giovac, when we get back, this is Homegrown. Drop!
Good morning, this is June Heintz. I'm from the Fralin Art Museum, and you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art here at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.
15 minutes past the hour, if you're just tuning in, this is Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm David, Clinton on the boards, Charlene Green and Lisa Giovac in the house, talking about the Signs of Change Project with the Jefferson School African American Heritage Center and the Bridge PAI. Clinton, you wanted the first question, so you shall have it.
So, what I'd like to know is when you were talking about doing stuff, where in the process, why in the process did it come out that an artistic expression would be the most, or why go for an artistic expression as opposed to just mm-hmm. say a straight informational expression, straight educational thing, which you could have done. And I'm wondering also if these in some way, I mean, how permanent are these going to be? Can these be seen as an alternative to say certain statuary that are in town, an alternative memorialization, shall we say?
Mm-hmm. Well, to answer the first part of your question, why use art as a means to share this information? Well, I guess the most obvious would be because we're an art institution, and For Freedoms is also, that's their whole platform, is to use art as the vehicle to either convey information or engage civic dialogue, discourse, and engage people to want to take action. So art is sort of the basis the way to get started to do that. And me personally, being an art educator and just an art person, I think art is it's something that can engage and attract pretty much everyone. There's so many different formats and styles, and whether it's visual art or music or performance, there's really something that can attract and interest everyone, and it's just such a great way to be able to communicate. That's how artists communicate. Artists create because they have to, because they need to be able to communicate either an emotion or something that, whether it's something current that's going on, that's how they communicate.
And to add to that, I think for me, because typically when I do this presentation, this specific presentation, for as much as I try to engage folks as I do it, it's all about giving information. It's just about me standing up in front of folks with the use of a lot of photos, depicting some of the things that I'm talking about, in addition to pieces of information and the stories that I attach to that, stories that have been told to me or I may have read about. That's been traditionally the way I've conveyed that information, but to be able to do it from an artistic perspective, I think it's just another way to and a different way to engage people. So they're thinking about the information that I may have shared with them, and then they're going to convey it using their emotions and their interpretation of what it is that I've shared, and hopefully in their interpretation and whatever sign they might come up with, that they're engaging the people around them in their neighborhood or in the community. So it's a continuation of engagement. It's a continuation of passing on information, but just doing it from an artist's perspective. And that was the thing that really attracted me in being a partner in this project. It's just a different way to go at and to get at perhaps a different audience, or maybe a similar audience, but in a different way. So the information is constantly new and challenging people. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
And I just want to re-ask one part of my question, because there are so many parts. How permanent are these installations going to be? Once you're done with them at the end of the mall, are they going to find other places in town? What's that?
Hopefully. I can't answer that definitively right now because we're not really sure. But so just to give you a little bit more background into the Four Freedoms Initiative, their goal is to get art institutions and artists involved in community engagement leading up to the midterms in November. Using art as a reminder that voting is one of the simplest yet most powerful things that we have as citizens in action. So beyond that, you know, Four Freedoms will kind of take a pause as a national organization, but for us personally, we see this, there's so much opportunity to continue with it, whether we continue with the workshops and see how they evolve, finding new homes for those banners, which I think absolutely they need to be either duplicated and put in more places or just put in different places around. But absolutely, we're going to see where we get to by the fall, and then once we get past, you know, into the new year, then we'll see where things take us.
Yeah.
But it's definitely not going to end.
Right.
And also to add to that, I think the permanence of any kind of installation hopefully will depend on how well people walk the talk. You know, so we're engaging folks in, you know, understanding Charlottesville's history from a different perspective and ways that they, you know, definitely if you were born and raised here, you did not get in school. And then if you're a transplant here, things that they don't share in those booklets where they say, welcome to Charlottesville, and they show you all the pictures that
are typically of white folks, unless it's an ad trying to say how diverse they are in their business. You're not going to get the kind of information that that I share in the racial and ethnic history of Charlottesville, where, you know, I'm talking about the eugenics research that happened at the University of Virginia and how that research informed Nazi Germany in the elimination of the Jews. You know, or how
Austrian made, Virginia born.
Exactly. Or how in 1924, when in the early 1900s, when there was an influx in the membership of the Klan, and there all of these statues were being installed up and down the East Coast and as far west as Missouri, with rebels and informing people about the lost cause. When all of that was happening in Virginia in 1924, you had two very significant laws. You had the Racial Integrity Act, which basically institutionalized the one drop rule. If you have one drop of black blood, then you could not call yourself a white person. You were a Negro. You were colored. And if you had Native blood, as long as you didn't have more than 1/16 Native blood, then you could call yourself a white person. But if that Native blood had black blood, then you were colored.
One drop.
And when you had that and the Sterilization Act that went after poor white people and all kinds of people of color, where all they had to do was say, oh, you have too much criminal history in your background, or you have the propensity to be a criminal. We need to sterilize you so you don't reproduce, or you're an imbecile, or you have epilepsy or some sort of ailment that in the attempt to create the perfect human, which in the minds of the folks at UVA who were doing that research and all the eugenics people, it was someone who was white, blonde, blue-eyed, and was smart enough to be well off. That was the perfect human. And if you didn't fit those characteristics, then they were trying to figure out what laws can we create to keep you within your group so you can't maneuver and advance, and what can we do to eliminate you through sterilization so that you can also put restrictions on who you are as a people. So that targeted poor white folks and people of color. So there are things that, and the first person who challenged that law was from Charlottesville. And so when you don't know all of the things that play into what is the narrative for Charlottesville other than Thomas Jefferson, UVA, and Monticello, then you are lacking in an understanding of what all is robust and rich about this particular area, including where the name Charlottesville came from, Queen Charlotte. A woman of African descent. And you don't see images of her around town because she's got a little something-something in her background.
One royal drop.
There you go.
I say again, the illustrious Charlene Green. We have to end. As much as I don't want to, we have to end. But promise me y'all will be back. Discussing the not the aftermath, but what happens after the Signs of Change project,
sure.
The next steps,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Who moves on, where's it going to go, this, that, and the third. Please come back.
Can I plug us?
Yeah, plug away.
Facebook, Signs of Change Seville.
You're on Facebook now, y'all.
We're on Facebook. Go to our website, signsofchangeseville.org. And if you're an artist and want to apply to this, you got a couple of days.
I'm an artist.
Please do.
Right on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Take it easy, y'all.
All right.
Did you have something, sir?
I'm just listening.
Okay, that's cool. No.
Is the deadline?
7th. August 7th. Yeah.
Okay. Good morning, y'all.
Hey,
morning.
How's it going? No. We got live audience now. We're moving up, Clinton. I'm telling you.
That's
See, you said it wouldn't happen, but I'm telling you, we're blowing up. All right. Here are just some of the artistic events happening this week, currently running through January 27th. Yes. Reflections.
I get it.
Native art across generations. Ooh. Oh, are we getting this?
We're getting this. We're doing this.
Are we doing this?
We're doing this.
Oh, hold on.
Everybody say hey.
Hey.
That's what I'm talking about.
All right, I gotta get mine too.
Yeah. Actually, I have to get one. Hold on, we gotta get Essay
taking a picture of us taking a picture.
I was gonna say, Essay takes the best pictures.
Yeah, he does.
Get Essay to take y'all's pictures while I do this.
Currently running until December 8th, the American Shakespeare Center.
Got it? Okay. We crazy at Homegrown. All right. Reflections, Native Art Across Generations. You know about this. An exhibition of the work of several contemporary Native American artists at UVA's Fairlawn Art Museum. Now through December 8th, the American Shakespeare Center runs its summer/fall season with just four plays. Emma Whipday's adaptation. See, I'm not doing the English. Emma Whipday's adaptation of Jane Austen's Emma. George Etheridge's The Man of Mode, or Sir Fopling Flatter, Richard III, and As You Like It, by Shakespeare. Currently running through September 9th, The Gun Gunny, Old Techniques Remain Strong. See, I got good at that. An exhibition of paintings on eucalyptus bark from the West Daly region of Northern Australia at the Klugeroo Aboriginal Art Collection. Currently running now through August 19th. My sister's birthday. Hey, Lex. Artist Samantha Gray. Yes. Guyanne Reveries running at the McGuffey Art Center. I saw her bus. Her art is dope. Y'all should check Sam Gray out. Currently running through August 18th, Young Frankenstein at Four County Players. Dope stuff. Also, currently running through August 12th, Newsies, the Broadway musical at Shannon Arts in Stanton. Last chance. She needs to get a picture. All right, what are we doing? Okay, you do this. All right.
Boom! Last chance to see The Mountaintop at UVA's Ruth Kaplan Theater as part of the Heritage Summer Theater Festival. Last chance to see Into the Woods in a special family matinee by the Charlottesville Opera at the Paramount Theater. Last chance to see The Pirates of Penzance by Black Box Players at Aldersgate United Methodist Church. Tough choice to see for today. August 10th, join Lance Barrera, Emma Terry, and Maureen Brondike. Oh, hey, Maureen. As they host Creative Monologue Sevil, a monthly breakfast lecture series for the creative community at the Bridge Progressive Arts Initiative. August 11th, Fraylin Art Museum docent and former guest June Heinz guides you through 45 minutes of meditative exploration of Fraylin art pieces at her Looking Inward Meditative Art Tour. August 11th, Butchertown Burlesque at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. And for your musical options this week... Am I doing it? You doing it?
I'll do it. Today, Two Wishes Trio, Glasshouse Winery, 3 p.m. Also today, The Pollux, Star Hill Brewery, Tap Room, 3:30 p.m. Also tonight, Chloe Esther, Front Porch Roots Music School, monthly open mic. Get your mic on. Also tonight, Sammy Horn at Fellini's and Travis Elliott at a Rapture. Tomorrow, open mic at the Twisted Branch Tea Bazaar. Always goes down there. August 7th, the Telemetry Music Series continues with Duets for Theremin and Lapsteel by Jordan Perry and PB. Of course, PB. At the Bridge, Progressive Arts Initiative. August 8th, Southern Gothic Futurist Haku Slam at the Twisted Branch Tea Bazaar. August 9th, Cooler Heads at Stinson Vineyards, Midlife Crisis at Dirty Nelly's, Dress Up for Halloween in August, with Ships in the Night, The Brickbats, Please Don't Tell, and DJ Jazzy Germ at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. That sounds kind of dope, actually. If you like dressing up, that's your thing right there. August 10th, Kendall Street Company plays Fridays after 5 at the Sprint Pavilion. What? Nope, next page. August 10th, Lady Maniac, Buckingham's KG No Garnett. Scrooge. What? What's with KG No Garnett? I mean, what? Max O'Raw, Congo Daman, and DMV have performed in This Is Our City Hip Hop Showcase at Rapture. All right. I just don't agree with that. I'm just saying. There's always a KG. There can't be a Garnett without a KG. August 10th, Jerry Red and Dirty Nellies, Blazer at Glasshouse Winery. All right, August 11th is crazy. Blair Jones, she got a release party for her new CD. What do you have? Woo, Blair.
at Rapunzel Coffee and Books, which is actually the most said phrase at Rapunzel's Coffee and Books.
Woohoo, Blair!
So it's fitting. Also on August 11th, Jim Wave at Albemarle Ciderworks and Lar at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. The Pollux again, Batesville Market. Yo, the Pollux are on tour, especially, I guess. And Kingdom of Mustang at Dirty Nelly's. August 13th, Butterfly Vendettas at Miller's. If the ground is incinerated by white nationalists with a nuclear bomb. Every Friday! The Picket and Grinning Vocal and Musical Jam at James River Brewery in Scottsville. Every Monday, Bluegrass Jam at the Front Porch Root Music School. Say what? Every Monday, Seafoot. Charlottesville Friends of Old Time Music.
Seafoot.
Seafoot. Weekly open jam at Thomas Jefferson Memorial Unitarian Church. Also every Monday, Red and the Romantics at the Whiskey Jar and Songwriter Night at the Local. Every Tuesday, the Tin Whistle Irish Session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Tuesday, also Latin Guitar Night with Miles Pierce and Humberto Sales at the Bebedero. Every Wednesday, oh, Wacky Wednesday. Here we go, Glenn. Pro Renata, open mic night at Pro Renata Farm Brewery.
Bam!
Open mic night at Holly Deli's Vin Pub, hosted by Josh Mayo.
Bam!
Jazz Collective number 9 at Falini's number 9.
Bam!
DG and Friends at the Babadero.
Bam!
Bachata Fusion at the Exart Park.
Bam!
502 Fossils at the Shabin Pub and Brock.
Shabin!
Mike Rosetsky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Wacky Wednesday, coming at you hard. Every Charlottesville. Every Charlottesville? Every Wednesday. Every night. All of the Charlottesvilles. All of the time. Every Thursday, Luette the Bebedero. And also every Thursday, John Durth at Quintet at Miller's. Because every Thursday, you just got to come down to Durth. It is... how, yeah, we're just gonna do some, pay some bills. It's just, yeah, homegrown. Drop!
This is Kevin Monroe with the Charlottesville Community Drum Choir, and you are listening to Homegrown, your show about local art on WPBC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. All right.
38 minutes past the hour. You're just tuning in. The hell is wrong with you? It's Homegrown, mofos. 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. What's wrong with you, man? It's the best show on 94.7. Stay tuned after the show for the second best show on 94.7. The Sunday morning wake-up call, previously recorded version with your host, Rick Moore. His guest is Colonel Martin E. Coomer, superintendent of the Albemarle-Charlottesville Regional Jail, talking about crime, rehabilitation, and the jail itself. Why do I imagine this man to have a monocle? A monocle and grating teeth that have just been grinded to the gums. Just mad. Cigarette holder, I'm imagining.
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to be recidivist.
Early behavior, my ass. So, he's just one of those guys. I just imagine him to be. But, dude. this is what I'm talking about. With this guy needs no introduction. You've probably seen him around the way. always with a camera in his hand. Always taking pics. Always doing his thing. Ezzy Amos, photographer, current artist in residence at New City Arts just recently, finally. Also does work for Seville People every day.
No, that's the name of the show.
That's the name of the show.
Yeah, that's the name of the show.
That's what I meant. I was getting to that. At the New City Arts Welcome Gallery, currently running now through the 31st as a... we talk all the time, so it's just
Yeah, we do.
It's good to see you again, and it's good to finally...
have you on. This is the first time you've been on.
Good to
see
you, brother. Yeah, this is the very first
time. Which is insane, and which is incredibly sad on our part. So, first of all, I want to apologize for the booking here. I'm just throwing shots at Clinton right now since he's behind me. But no, you're just an amazing friend, and you're a wonderful guy. And I just see you doing good stuff every day.
Thank you. Seeing you
catch a little flack. I remember you one time. You got accosted on the downtown mall. caught one to the face unexpectedly by some imbalanced person.
Yeah, Uncle Fishnell has it.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Not everybody likes what you do, which is unfortunate. But hey, somebody's got to do it.
And I
appreciate you doing that. So let's talk about Seville People Every Day. Because you not only are you known for the capture of photography of activism in the community, but just capturing you're good on sound, right? Yeah, just capturing everyday folk in their stride, in their daily routine in Charlottesville. And you can catch it on Facebook, right?
Yes.
The captions, yeah. Usually there's like a little blurb about what who the person is and what they're doing. But
Actually, I do not put anything
about
the people.
Oh, you don't do that anymore?
No, I don't say anything about the person or what they're doing.
Oh, you just put it up there.
I just let the photos speak for themselves.
That's cool.
That's actually don't even interview the people. Most times I don't even introduce myself. And there's a reason for that. And probably to talk about it down the line.
We can talk about it right now. I'm sorry for my assuming. Talk about that. Talk about your style and talk about like what that interaction is like when I assume you're just like, hey, can I take a picture? Can I fit? I'm trying to figure out the question. Talk about the process.
Yeah, actually, I actually don't even introduce myself. I don't ask them to take a picture. And the reason for that is the moment I introduce myself into that space, I mess up that. I just take away from it. The idea is to catch that space and that moment as it is organically, mm-hmm. and not try to put myself into that situation, because mm-hmm. the moment I introduce me into it, I sort of contaminate that scene.
Isn't that an invasion of privacy though? Because not everybody just wants to get their picture taken like out of the
park. True, very true. But at the same time, being in a public space and assuming some level of privacy is pretty.
No, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
Especially right now, nothing is private.
And because I have a camera that looks a little bit professional doesn't mean everybody doesn't have a cell phone that they're all taking selfies. And every time someone takes a selfie of themselves, they're catching 10, 15 other people in the background. Would you go walk up to everybody and tell them not to take selfie? I'm not trying to make excuses for what I'm doing, but I'm just saying that I've had this argument. I've had people ask me this question mm-hmm. before, like, is this an invasion of privacy? And I asked the question, if you're in a public space, why would there be an assumption of privacy when you're in a public space? I don't get it.
Yeah.
So what is it that you're trying to do? Is it more of a journalistic thing? Are you trying to capture something for posterity? Is it more of a particular artistic aesthetic where you want to capture life and action as it's happening, unfiltered? Like, what is your goal?
It's a little bit of everything you just said right now. Basically, what I'm trying to do is, actually, the project started from me just walking the mall, and I realized, it just hit me one day, like, there's just a very few of my kind. I mean, a black person walking the mall. I see a few, you know. I've seen you walk the mall once or twice before, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's just once or twice, you know. Like, how many times have we ever run into each other in the mall? Points I'm just trying to make is the very, very few people of color in the mall.
Mm.
And then another thing that I noticed about the mall is that every day I go to the mall, there's always something new. There's always something interesting. And I just kept asking myself, wow, this little space here, you know, just the mall. There's so much going on here that needs to be told. There's so much story here that needs to be told. So about a year and a half, going on 2 years now, I decided to start documenting the mall. And that just gave me, you know, that I just started photographing it, and from there things just started happening. Initially it was, you know, I didn't get a very good reception. People would be like, you know, of course, naturally when somebody comes with a camera in your face, and especially my style of photographing, I tend to get in people's faces to a certain degree. It's just the way I like to tell my story, you know. I think it's creepy if I'm shooting from like a mile away or whatever,
and
sneaking up or like, you know, spying on you. I want you to see me, or maybe not see me, and turn around and see that I'm there. I'm not hiding from you, but at the same time, I'm not trying to influence your reaction or how you react to my camera. That's why I'm shooting with this tiny little thing that's pretty unassuming.
Yeah.
I could just be any other person walking the mall and taking some, you know, some tourist photos and stuff. Yeah.
And all of that is completely valid and fair, and I want to talk about more about the downtown mall, and especially your perspective coming from outside of Charlottesville. So I want to get that. We got to pay a bill. We'll be right back. This is Homegrown. Drop!
Keith Morris and the Crooked Numbers, and you're listening to 94.7 Homegrown Radio.
47 minutes past the hour if you're just tuning in. Come on, man. Come on, y'all. Get it together. You late. Stop attacking the listener. Stop. You can come in anytime you want to. Anytime. This is not an attack. This is not an attack. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. That's all. 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Ezzy Amos in the house. Current resident photographer in Charlottesville. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the downtown mall. Let's talk about Seaville People Every Day.
Yeah.
Your approach, which is kind of like very little to no approach at all. You kind of let people know that, hey, I'm a dude with the camera in the back. I'm going to be spotlighting your life for a little bit. And coming into, how long have you lived in Charlottesville?
It's going on 10 years now. It's going to be 10 in November.
Cool. So in that time, and you said you just kind of like started this project in the last like couple of years or
so. Yeah.
Kind of like living in Charlottesville. And may I ask, where is your, you know, where do you originally hail from?
I'm originally from Nigeria, West Africa.
Cool.
The motherland.
So the motherland, not, so you're not just African American. You
No, blackety, I am African.
You blackety black.
Yeah, I'm black. So,
talk about that. Talk about not only being a black person, but being a Nigerian person in America, in Charlottesville, in this haven of seemingly comfortable liberalism, but apparent, palpable racial tension, and capturing that on film.
Yeah. I have to say this. Coming to the States has been a blessing in every way you can imagine it for me. Personally, for me to be able to develop my art, to get to where I am right now, for me to have the opportunity to do some of those things that I'm doing right now, it's just been amazing. Just, you know, to put it mildly, to be in the States. Charlottesville has given me so much, and it's just been, I can take some water. Yeah, thank you. Some water in the house.
Oh, yeah, we fancy here at Homegrown.
Yeah. So it's been a great journey for me. I mean, not to say that it's not been hard. It's been very hard, especially in Charlottesville. You know, I've had my own share of in your face kind of, you know, racial confrontations. But the truth of the matter is, I have to say it. I just have to say, you know, tell it the way it is. That's things are much better for me here in the States since I've been here than how things, you know, could have turned out for me in Nigeria. So I'm happy I call this place home, and that's why I feel it's part of my duty to try to build this place up or tell the story of this place. However, I'll try to improve this place however much I can as an artist. Yeah.
So it's interesting that this is the second time you've talked about telling stories.
Yeah.
And so here's a question that I hadn't realized that I've always wanted to ask of a photographer.
Yes.
Is, in your art, what's
what's more important for you to, what is more important for photography to do, to tell your story or to tell the subject story?
Well, that's a very beautiful question. And what is coming to mind right now is actually from, you know, how I probably, okay, yeah, you're asking me, so I'm going to answer you how I would answer this question. Someone else might say something different. I think it's a mix of both. You as a photographer, as much as you can, you as an artist, let me just put it that way, as much as you can, as much as you want to take yourself out of, you know, whatever thing you're working at or working on, the fact that just the fact that you're working on that thing, has an element of you in it. So there's really no taking that, breaking that apart. Cause say I'm walking the mall, I see somebody, you know, doing something interesting. What makes me define that thing as interesting? And the only reason I'm defining that thing, as being interesting is because of the experience of my experience in life. So I'm bringing my own personal thing into that story. So really, it's hard to dissociate your personal, you know, experience and all that from projects you're working on.
Right. I've been watching this Netflix special, Evil Genius, and the courtroom artist confessed something in that when they first took on the case and the person on trial was first presented, they wanted to draw that person in a negative light, yeah, to show, like, you know, this type of villain. But once this person started to express her story, her childhood story, her background and all of this, the artist tended to gain a sense of sympathy and, unbeknownst to him, draw the person in a more forgiving light,
yeah,
different tones, less shading. I guess what I'm trying to say by this is that I think the artist does have control and a responsibility to paint that subject in whatever light it fits their intention.
So
as an
very
artist.
True. Yes. Yes. And I totally agree with that.
So I would guess, like, would I be accurate in saying that you get a first impression when you see a subject or a person that you want to take a picture of, and then maybe take that picture and then maybe see what they are and your perspective changes, and then maybe take a different picture in a different light? Like, how does it affect your work as an artist?
Yeah, that's a great question. I have found myself in a situation where I've taken a photo, and then minutes later, just lingering around that area, I get to know a little bit more about the subject, and I'm like, maybe I shouldn't post this photo. Because there's a thin line as a street photographer, street photographers will tell you this. A lot of them actually don't take photos of, you know, homeless folks or folks that are, you know, down in their luck, you know.
Why?
Basically, some of them just want to go, I don't want to take advantage of folks. And I get it. I get you taking photos of, you know, a homeless person and then putting it out there for sale. Like, oh, yeah, that's definitely, without a doubt, that is you taking advantage of those folks. The reason I'm taking photos of anybody, any and whoever I find on the mall, so long I think there's a story to be told there, is because I'm trying to tell a story. What is the story I'm trying to tell? I told you initially that I noticed a lot of things about the downtown mall. It's interesting how there's so much wealth on the downtown mall. People are sitting down, dining, and eating all this $15 hamburgers and all sorts right there behind them. Right there behind them, there's somebody with a sign saying, please give me 25 cents, I'm hungry, or I'm homeless or something. We've gotten so used to those people on the mall that we just go about our normal business, like though they're just another, pillar or whatever on the street. Like, they're always there. Let's just go and have a good time, you know. And that's what I'm trying to. That's what I'm trying to. And yeah, that's what I'm trying to shed some light on. Like, these people, they are actually there, and they have. There's something going on here, you know. Let's try to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And if I can put it out there and put it in people's faces, and they actually see them. Mm-hmm. The other day, I'll tell you one real quick. I took a knee to get a photo of a homeless guy who just sat down right at Miller's. He was sleeping. He was kind of like just resting his head. I just wanted to get a photo of just him. And right there, I took a knee, framed the photos right, of, you know, composed it. So I was about to click. Two ladies walked into my frame, you know, typing away on their phone, obviously enjoying themselves and happy. They came and made that story for me. I was just going to tell a story of somebody. And there, they just came and told the full story of what I was trying to sell.
Yeah. It was,
You
made yourself important. You made yourself more important than this person that, you know, I diverted my attention to in the first place.
Something like that. Yeah. Something like that. And they helped me.
Did you take the picture?
I took the picture because they came into the frame.
Right.
And there was this happy couple, this happy. And they were blurred. I blurred them out because they were not in focus.
Right.
I was focusing on this person, so you could see
but
the cell phone
power.
Typing and having fun, and
there's
this guy
still
just
so
there,
much
like
power
God,
in that.
Like God, how do I make it to tomorrow or whatever?
And I think it's important that when you take these pictures of the homeless and also the wealthy, and you call it Seville people every day. That's a mural. That's an amalgamation of the collection of people. It's not you're taking advantage of homeless people. You're taking advantage of wealthy people too. It's a collection of all of these paintings and perspectives and stories and views of Charlottesville and how they differ and how they're outweighed in some way, shape, and form. And how important that is for everybody to see that weight. That's incredible. So we got 1.5. Is that what that is? The knuckle? Just one quick question before I plug you. How often do you shoot? It looks like you're shooting all the time.
Every day.
Like, it looks like you must go through like 5 SIM cards a day.
I photograph every day. I have a 128 gig drive. What's it called? SD card on my camera. So I'm photographing all the time. And it's so cool that I can transfer stuff to my phone as I shoot.
That's crazy.
So I'm photographing and I'm posting right there and then. Technology is.
You must have like a server for like a hard drive, just full of photos. I'm gonna see you next week.
Yes,
I'll be there.
And
we'll be going live, so I'll be there in the field, and I'm sure I'll bump into you.
Yes, let's all do right. that. I'll look out for you guys.
Be safe. Ezzy Amos, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much. All this has been fun.
Yeah. Plug the show. Seville people every day at the New City Arts Welcome Gallery. Currently running now through the 31st. And you're still going to be shooting for New City Arts.
I'm working on another project called Coming Home, Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
It's a project on Vinegar Hill. Look out for that. It's gonna rock us.
All right. We got to go, but we'll talk about it when you come back.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Wink, wink. Cool. So yep. We're done. this is Homegrown. We love you guys. Take it easy.
94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.